The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ready, Set, Spill. I'm Lindsay Carter, the founder and CEO of Set Active, a new mother and the host of Ready, Set, Spill. Joining me on this episode is a wearer of many hats, leading a multifaceted business, utilizing her established platform to share inspirations between fashion design, lifestyles, motherhood, mental health, and so much more. She's crafted a community for everyone to have a place to share creativity and opinions without judgment. Today, I welcome Whitney Port onto Ready, Set, Spill. I always start my podcast with an icebreaker.
Okay.
What is something people don't know about you?
Ooh. Well, I used to say people didn't know that I had sort of like a quirky personality and more of like a louder personality than it came across on TV. But now, since I feel like we're able to show ourselves on social media and not have editors producing us, I feel like I've been able to show that a little bit more. And like on our YouTube, you see like a little bit more like humor, quirkiness. But
yeah.
I feel like there was always this misconception about me from the Hills, which was that I was just like pretty quiet and sweet and like just like a good friend. And I think that I can be those things, but like I think I'm a little bit spicier than that.
I wish they showed that.
Yeah,
side.
So did I. But they were always very set on like showing, especially Lauren and I, showing us in like a certain way, kind of like the girl next door best friend type. And they didn't really want to derail from that.
Yeah. That's why, like, I don't think I could ever do it. I've gotten approached. I used to work in TV. I worked at E.
Yeah,
in Wilshire Studios. It was my first job out of college
in
producing. And I hated it. I hated being a
what
producer.
What kind of a producer?
We did Sex with Brody. Sex
oh
with Brody
my
Jenner.
God.
I know. So I was, like, with him every single day.
Oh, my God.
And we did some other shows that, like, were in development. They actually, like, never made it to fruition. But
yeah.
I didn't like manipulating people.
I
was like, this
don't
is not
you.
For me.
I totally don't blame you.
And then recently, in the last 2 years, I've been approached and Set has been approached because I show a lot of, like, the BTS at Set Active for, like, reality shows. Like, absolutely not.
No way.
I'm not doing it.
No.
Like, there's no way.
I know. I was, like, very Set when they came back and did The Hills New Beginnings, like the reboot of the show.
Yes.
I was very much like, personal life is not going to be on the show. Like, Timmy's not going to be on it. Sonny's not going to be on it. I just didn't want to have that like outside manipulation because I remember how bad those days were. Like, I love the producers actually on The Hills in the City. Like, I ended up marrying one. I became so close with them, and it was like camp, you know, because you're with them more than you're with anybody else pretty much. And so like, I adored them, but at the same time, it was always a constant battle when we would go to film scenes of like feeling like I was being manipulated, you know, or not knowing what they were trying to get at. And I can imagine, like, as a good person like you are, that wouldn't feel good to do that to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, both directions were hard no for me.
Yeah,
I was
totally.
Like, I'm not going to produce and I'm definitely not going to be on camera. So
yeah. So no.
Not happening.
Yeah.
Before I dive into everything, I'm sitting here and I'm staring at your skin,
which is
like porcelain.
Oh my God.
Like,
thank
what
you.
Is the secret?
Well, I spend so much time taking care of my skin.
It's like perfect.
Thank you so much. So about 2 months ago, I did a laser that was pretty intense.
Okay.
And at first, I broke out so badly from it. It wasn't the Halo laser. It was, I'm blanking on the name, Erbium.
Okay.
Okay. I think it was called Erbium. And the after effects for like the first month were not good. But now in the second month, I'm finally starting to see what's happening because I guess it's a type of laser. Like they really poke at your skin and it helps build collagen and like collagen builds up more and more over time. So they said even after 6 months of the laser, like your skin should be even more amazing. But yeah, I did that laser. And then I also just like
have a great skincare routine.
Yeah, I have a really good skincare routine. I have like a couple hero products that I really rely on. And right now it's a tinted moisturizer. I mix Elastin tinted moisturizer with the Super Goop glow screen.
Okay.
And that's probably what's giving me like the glow.
But it's also just like
No blemish. It's perfect.
Oh, my God. Thank
you. Yeah, I
Thank
got you. A little distracted. Okay, so let's dive into it. Everyone knows you, who's listening, as Whitney from The Hills, but I want to kind of like, yes, we'll probably talk about you being on The Hills, totally. But I want to strip it down to like, who's Whitney Poor? And I want people to just hear you answer that question. Yeah. So who's Whitney?
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to like say who you are in like
your mom.
Words. But yes. No. So I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm a sister. I'm an entrepreneur. I think who I really am is just like a creative soul that thrives on like having a good time, like honestly not working too hard because I don't believe in hustle culture. I mean, I work hard, but I really believe it's important to find that, I don't want to say balance because I'm a firm believer that there really is no such thing as like a perfect balance, but I'm a firm believer on like really enjoying life and not trying to work for something that you inevitably will have like in the way future. Like I want each present moment to be fun and filled with joy. And so I don't think that like working is the key to that for me, you know, like I have to have an even mix of both.
Totally.
So yeah, I think I'm just like a creative, goofy, like fun loving 37 year old woman.
I love that.
Yeah.
I also think that like people, what I'm learning as I'm getting older is I always thought like I was someone who was like hustling after work, but I realized that I think being an entrepreneur is such a passion of mine and is such a passion that it doesn't feel like work for me.
100%.
And so like I got a text this morning. One of my friends, she owns Forma Pilates, which is like this big Pilates studio in LA. And she works hard and she's texting me and she was like, I look up to you so much. I don't know how you do it. And I was like, it doesn't feel like work for me. So like, of course there are hard days.
Of course.
And there's days where I'm very stressed out.
But you're doing what you're passionate about. And so it feels like a hobby. I feel that way too. Like recording this podcast, doing my YouTube with Timmy, like designing my collections for Rent the Runway. All of these things feel like just so much fun, like what I'm meant to be doing, that I also don't look at it as like, oh God, I'm so bogged down staring at a computer screen all day, because that's not my work. And if it were, I would go crazy. But I'm the same as you. I think it's so important to find what you love to do so that work doesn't feel like work and it can be sustainable and you don't then end up burning out.
Totally.
Yeah.
I am like such a big believer in that. Like if someone's if you're unhappy at a job or you feel like you are burnt out or you're overworking or what, like you're probably not where you should be.
Totally.
In my opinion.
I completely agree.
Because the second I told you before we started recording, I hated my job at NBC Universal and I was working probably 8 to 10:30 every single day. It was long hours, especially in production.
Yeah,
and
that's
you're running all over the place.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way like people enjoy working this much.
No.
But then I have set and I'm like, I hate the weekends. I'm like, I'm ready for Monday.
Right.
Like I'm ready for the week because I like don't like not being at the office.
Yeah. It's
but
it's
not in a hustle like work culture way.
Totally.
I don't know how to explain it.
No, I it makes complete sense. And also, isn't it interesting that set is the career that you are the most successful at, you know, like when you find also what you love to do, it sometimes I think success comes easier because it's what is natural to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you don't have to work so hard for it because you're doing what you're meant to be doing.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's why I always tell people like try to be passionate about what you're doing because everything will fall into place. Of course, you'll have to pivot and there's hiccups and this and that and fires you have to put out. But I would say for the majority of the time, if like you're passionate about what you're doing, the success will follow.
Totally. And we're living in a day and age now where you can follow your paths and do what you want. You know, like it shouldn't be so limiting where you get out of college and you're like, oh, what corporation am I going to have to go work for now? Like, you can pave your own path. You can create your own career, you know, and that's what's so cool is that everyone has the power to do something that they love.
Yeah. I feel like people just forget that because like we live in this society where people are just watching what other people are doing on social media and they think that's the path they have to follow. Of course, like, you know, you're taught your whole life, like you have to go to school, then you go to college and then you get a job. And it's like,
this trajectory.
Is the and I always say to people, I'm like, there's no rule. Like when you're born, like I didn't give a rule book to Ace and say, like, this is what we're going to follow, buddy. Like,
right.
I mean, he doesn't even understand me half the time right now, but there's no rule book.
There isn't.
You know, like, you have to kind of dance to your own beat.
Yes.
Like, and figure it out. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And I think as parents, that's our responsibility to instill that on our kids and make sure that we're not forcing them into a box or into a certain path, that we're really like tuning into what their wants and needs are and what they're passionate about, and then like growing with them through that.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, how has your past, like being on TV, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, how has everything kind of paved the way into you becoming a mom?
So I feel like I wasn't the kind of girl who like always envisioned myself as a mom. Like, I think in the back of my head, I knew that I would have children if I was lucky enough, but I wasn't like desperate to become a mom. I think once I met Timmy and felt his passion for having kids and saw how badly he wanted to have kids, I was like, oh, this is for sure going to happen. And we're going to have an amazing, happy family. And like, I think that it was very formulaic for us looking back on it. And when I tell this story, like, we got married and then we were married for a year and then we decided to go off our birth control. And then I got pregnant within a month. And like, I think that I thought going into it, it was sort of just going to be as simple as that. And becoming a mom was probably, to this day, the most challenging thing, the most challenging like role shift that I've ever dealt with.
Harder than being in the public eye on TV.
100%. 100%. Only because when I was on TV, there wasn't social media.
Right.
It didn't affect me. Like, the celebrity quote fame aspect of the show, like, never stressed me out really, because there was just not as much scrutinization as there is now.
Yeah.
And I was able to really keep my private life pretty private. So I always had these like two separate lives, you know, there was like Hills Whitney and then there was like Whitney. So yeah, then once I got pregnant, it was just like, whoa, what did I get myself into? I had a really, really difficult pregnancy, not health-wise. I mean, every doctor's visit was normal. Like, everything was fine with the baby. I just could not identify with being a mom, and I didn't like myself. I was just really I felt like I was out of my body, and there was this lack of control, and I think that's what I really struggled with, like all these things happening to me that I couldn't control. And I started to get like kind of depressed and resentful of it. And then that, I was obviously so happy when Sunny was born, and like desperately, like at that point when I was pregnant, like desperately wanted to be a mom and could envision myself being a mom. But I thought once he was born, like, I would feel so much better. And then the breastfeeding saga hit me and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? Like, why hasn't anyone told me about this?
No one talks about like the hard parts of A, pregnancy, and B, like postpartum, and then C, a newborn.
Right.
I felt like I got hit with a ton of bricks after I had Ace.
Same.
No one talks about
No one talks. I think it's one of those things where when you are going through it, you're so in it. And then a couple years later, you kind of forget. Like, it's like pregnancy and postnatal, like, amnesia almost, you know? Like, even now, I think about that period and I'm like, oh, I could do that again. Like, I'll figure it out. I could do it again. I think women kind of forget how hard it is.
Totally.
And then they don't necessarily warn anybody else. But also, people who are going through it, like, you don't really want to hear about something until you're actually going through it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it, like, you don't, yes. I
like, you don't know the questions to ask. You don't know what your situation is going to be. So, like, you don't even know that breastfeeding is going to be an issue until it is an issue.
I thought it was just you take the baby, put them on your boob, and they're going to start sucking.
Same.
That is
same.
Not what it is.
I was like, oh my God, if I'm lucky enough to have milk, like, I'll breastfeed and it'll be great. And if I don't have milk, whatever. And like, it wasn't as simple as that.
No.
It wasn't just about a milk production issue. It was like adding on a whole nother layer of responsibility to having a baby, which is already extremely tiresome. And then there's the emotional aspect to it, which is this guilt if you decide to not do it. So that really threw me for a loop. And that was a really long-winded answer of how I became a mom. But
no,
I would
think it's
say,
important that people hear it.
Yeah, I would say like that pregnancy into the first 6 months to a year was really brutal for me. And it took me a lot of time to recover from it. And I think that if I do go through it again, I've told myself a million times, like, I will not put the pressure on myself to breastfeed if it's not working for the family. Like, I will not do things a certain way. I will not judge myself a certain way. Obviously, you only have so much control. I'm sure you've thought the same things and you're going through it twice. And I wonder if you've given yourself more grace.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
I told you before, I lost my mom when I was little. So going pregnant being pregnant without her was definitely probably like one of those times where I was not avoiding, but scared for that to happen. First, it was like getting engaged and having my wedding and not having her. And then it was getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Because she was such an incredible mom. And I made the decision to hire a doula because I really wanted that support. And doulas are so amazing. They're so loving. They're so maternal. They're like really there for you and not the hospital and not anybody else but you. Like, they want the baby to come out healthy, but they're there for you.
Right.
And we would meet every 2 weeks up until the third trimester. Then it was like every week. And we would talk about these things and we would talk about, you know, am I going to breastfeed and I'm not. And I think for me, in terms of breastfeeding, I was like, look, if it works, I'm going to do it. If it doesn't work, my baby's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Like, the formula is a thing. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Fed is best. And of course, I think, and my doula always says this to me, that I think because I wasn't putting so much pressure on myself to breastfeed, of course, my milk came in right away. Mm-hmm. He latched right away. Mm-hmm. It was so easy to breastfeed for me. But I only did it for like a month because I didn't want to pump. Yeah. I didn't want to be attached to wires. I was like, I'll let him get the nutrients. Yeah. And then when it dries, it dries. Yeah. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But the craziest loop for me was that no one told me about and no one prepared me for, except my doula was like, you might have this thing on day 3. It's called baby blues, where you cry uncontrollably because your hormones are leveling out. And I was like, yeah, whatever. She's like, it happens to some people. It might not happen. I just want to let you know. Sure enough, day 3, my night nurse comes in to my room to check on me, see if I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I am uncontrollably sobbing.
Oh my God.
Like, I think the last time I cried that hard was maybe at my mom's funeral. I was like, what is wrong with me? I thought something was wrong. I was like, no one talks about this.
Yeah, that actually makes so much sense to me because I've heard of baby blues, but I didn't know that it had like any time correlation to like the third day. But now that I'm thinking back to the third day, like, that was the day that we went home and I was hysterical. And I remember we were going home to meet the baby nurse for the first time in person. We had only done Zoom with her. And I was like, I don't want her in the house. Like, get this stranger out of my house. Like, I was freaking out. And then I was starting to think about all these worst case scenario things. Mm-hmm. Like, my head was going to a crazy place of envisioning like accidents with the baby nurse and the baby and like really scary stuff that I couldn't believe I was envisioning. But yeah, it's so wild how your hormones just completely take over. And I think if you're aware of that going into it, like, and hopefully for anyone listening, if you're about to have a baby, like, be mindful of that. Yeah. So when those emotions come on, you're not so hard on yourself.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it was so helpful, like, having Andre, who was my doula, because she was like, I'm going to call you. I'll walk you through it. And then I told my night nurse, I was like, I think I'm experiencing baby blues. I mean, she saw I'm allergic to tears, so my face breaks out in hives when I cry. I know. It's not uncomfortable.
I cry every other day.
When we're done recording, I'll show you a picture.
Oh my God. Are you allergic to salt water?
It's something in your I don't know what it is.
Yeah. A certain chemical in your tears that your skin can't handle.
I just break out in hives, like full red blotchy hives.
So do you have to stop yourself from crying all the time?
No, it's not uncomfortable. Okay. Like, I don't feel what's happening, but if I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh,
whoa,
something's not right.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Yeah. So my night nurse obviously like was like, whoa. And I told her, I was like, this is what it's going to be. It happened for, I think, 3 days in a row.
Wow.
And then I remember being like, wow, today's the first day I'm not crying. Like, it was baby blues.
Totally.
Like, you know, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
So I know there's just like so much with motherhood that I feel like goes unspoken or that you don't even talk about, or even your friends who have kids before you don't tell you about. Yeah. I'm just like, there has to be better resources out there, because had I known and prepped myself that like maybe, you know, this is what baby blues are like and this is what it's going to feel like, I feel like I wouldn't have felt as crazy. I mean, I felt crazy.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, and I feel so bad saying this, but I always had a rocky relationship with my dad. Uh-huh. And then I had a baby. Uh-huh. And now I like told my assistant I have to set up a therapy appointment because I resent my dad so much now that I'm a parent.
Really?
And like now that I see what it is to be a parent, given that it's only been 16 months, but still like.
You notice the things that he wasn't able to. He didn't do.
I have to give him grace because there's four of us. Uh-huh. And when my mom died, like, I'm sure he was like, whoa.
How old were you when your mom died?
I was 9.
And how old were all your siblings?
So my oldest sister was 13. And then my other sister was, 12.
Uh-huh.
And then my brother was 2 years younger than me, so 7.
Uh-huh. So you guys were so
young. Yeah, we were young. We were really sick? Young. Yeah, so I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, actually. And I know this podcast is not about me, so I'm excited to get it back to you.
Well, I lost my dad, too, so we and I'm one of 5 kids, but it's a boy and 4 girls. So yeah. We were older, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I don't think I've ever, like, I've been this honest about her death, but my mom had lupus and Crohn's. Mm. And then because of the pain, she got very addicted to drugs, mm-hmm. like painkillers. Yeah. And then drugs turned into way more than that. It turned into like heroin and different, you know, hard drugs. And at one point, I think she even had me help her with drugs because she would tell me, it's like, mommy's in pain. Like, I need your help.
Right.
And I say this, but she was an incredible mom outside. Like when she was well and healthy, like she was it. Like I idolized her.
Yeah. She was just like a victim of the drugs.
And then she ended up dying from a staph infection in her heart, I'm sure from a needle or something. And I was 9 and I remember it like perfectly. But I mean, it affected me and it still affects me to this day. I can talk about it. I'm strong about it. But I mean, losing anyone close to you affects you so much more than you think, mm-hmm. and affects you differently in different stages
Your life. It's so true. One of the reasons why, I mean, we had a really long engagement just because I couldn't figure out like what I even wanted to do about my wedding, because I couldn't fathom the fact that my dad wasn't going to be there. And I felt like I was just delaying things because nothing felt right for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the grief comes in heavy in certain moments as we get older, like really huge life moments, like with Sunny being born, certain birthdays of Sunny's. Yeah. Like obviously getting married. And like generally what I've had to work myself out of is kind of this state of gray that I felt like I had been in for a while after he died. And I feel like that lasted until maybe about a year ago. And it's partly due to me finally deciding to go on antidepressants because I was just feeling so much just like lingering pain, and it was affecting so many relationships. But it's hard when you lose your parent. You don't see the world the same way anymore, because there it's just this loss that you can't connect to. There's nowhere to go. Like someone said, it's like losing, you have all this love to give but nowhere for it to go because you can't show this love to this person. So it's just like this, all this love in your body that is just like trapped. And that's what it feels like sometimes. It will be like that for us forever. Unfortunately. Yeah. And we just have to figure out how to take care of ourselves so that we can like be whole people for our families and for ourselves, most importantly.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I always say like when someone I know loses someone close to them, like I know that there's actually nothing I can say that'll make that person feel better. No. So I don't even try.
Same.
I'm just like, I'm here. I can be with you if you want company, or I can just tell you that I love you and I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And it's so often that those people respond. They're like, thank you.
Right.
Like, because people, and there's nothing wrong. Like, if people don't know what it's like, of course, like, what are they going to say? So they try to come up with something to make them feel better.
Exactly.
But grief is hard. I mean, I'm on anti-anxiety medicine. Mm-hmm. I developed a fear of abandonment, basically, from losing my mom.
Yeah.
Specifically with women.
Yeah.
And so high school, college, like, I'd give and I'd give and I'd give. And I'd always be the friend to, like, pay for dinner. I still am that way because it's, like, I'm so scared I'm going to lose that person. And I try
to, holding on to them in certain ways.
Yeah. And now recently, I'm 31, like, I just don't do it. I'm so tired of that life, like, of, like, constantly giving that I think I exhausted myself.
Right.
I don't do anything anymore. I go home from work. I hang out with Ace until he goes to sleep. And I stay home.
Well, your soul is filled up a little bit more now. You know what I mean? Like, it's filled up by your husband, who you know is not going anywhere. Totally. And your son, who you know is not going anywhere. And you know you're never going to abandon them. So you probably have just, you've become more confident in yourself and, like, don't fear that because you're just more, like, rooted.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I feel, too. Like, I feel so grateful for Timmy and for my son, who have given me, like, hope for my life, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a stigma behind going on medication for mental health.
Yes.
That I hear often.
Yes.
Especially people who write into, like, my personal Instagram about listening to my podcast and how open I am about talking about medication. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand. Like, I still try to wrap my head around, like, why don't people want to talk about going on medicine?
I know.
And then I realized I was on medicine, like, basically my whole life. Mm-hmm. And then it got really bad when my sister went to rehab because obviously it was triggering. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember, like, being, like, numb, and I was like, I'm never going to go on medicine again. But it turns out I was just on the wrong type of medicine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I feel like there's so many facets of, like, people being scared they're going to be put on the wrong medicine, mm-hmm. or people just, like, not wanting to rely, as, you know, on a crutch, which it's not a crutch. Like, sometimes we don't know how to chemically balance what's going on.
Totally.
And you need the medicine.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What's your take on, like,
on why people? I think that there's, like, obviously, this whole wellness trend, there's two things working against each other. There's, like, this whole wellness trend about just putting everything natural into our bodies and just leading this, like, extremely holistic lifestyle and taking care of our bodies and our minds. And I feel like that sort of collides with the medicine piece, because I think medicine has been, it just gets a bad rap, you know? Like, I think that it has, like, a stigma with it because there's just been so many, like, it numbs you almost. I feel like that is what people think when they think about medicine, that it just numbs you and it's like putting a Band-Aid on and you're not actually dealing with the issue. But I just think that it's really short-sighted. And I think that short-sighted. And I think that people that are making that opinion are not educated on what the medicine is actually doing it and why people actually need it. You know, like, I can't say that my chemistry, like, I just started going on, and I think that it was likely mostly environmental stuff that was happening, like dealing with my dad passing away, anxieties around becoming a mom, the whole breastfeeding situation, like COVID and the anxieties with that, like not being able to get pregnant. You know, I've had 5 miscarriages in 3 years. So, like, there's been a lot of things in my environment that have gone on that have caused these things. And so sometimes I even will say to myself, like, oh, my God, Whitney, if you can just control your environment and get over all these things, then you won't need the medication. But it's like, I can't control my environment. I can't control that I've had 5 miscarriages. I can't control that my dad passed away. And if I need this type of thing to, like, be a present, happy person, then I'm going to take it. I go back and forth with it all the time. I go, one day I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't have to take it. I wish I didn't have to rely on it. You know, like, I do think that way sometimes. And then I immediately answer myself and I'm like, it's totally, like, you're doing yourself a service. Like, this is modern science, you know? Totally. Like, don't be so hard on yourself about this.
Yeah.
So I think it's just being mindful and, like, recognizing if you do feel any sort of shame around it, to, like, double check yourself and, like, tell yourself in reality what it has done for you. Like, I could write down a list of 15 things in the past year of being on it, like 15 ways that it's made my life more full, more, you know, like that I've been able to be more present, healthier, like so many different things. And that's reason enough for me.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the same thoughts too of like, yeah. I don't want to, like, it's annoying opening a pill bottle every single night.
Yes.
And like, you know, packing for vacation. Oh, I can't forget my meds. Like,
totally.
It's a responsibility that you have to add to your daily routine. Mm-hmm. But then I always ask myself, and also like the thought of not wanting to rely on it, but mm-hmm. also then I think about like, I close my eyes and I'm like, just remember what it was like before.
Exactly.
And I do. And I'm like, my chest gets, I like mm-hmm. almost induce my own panic attack because I don't ever want to feel like that again.
I'm so with you. And it's like, if this is what we need for us to feel happy, which is literally the most important thing, like, and mentally stable, then that's what we need to do.
Yeah. Exactly. And I also remind myself, well, now I'm obviously living for my son and my husband and my family, but like, I'm not here to play by anyone's rules. Like, that's why I always talk about this, like, rule book. Like, who wrote this rule book that we have to follow?
I feel like we always subconsciously, whenever we're making big decisions, like, we are in the back of our head, or at least I'm thinking about, what would this person do in this instance? What would this person do? You know, like, I'm thinking about how other people would mm-hmm. handle my situation. And I'm like, why am I doing that? Like, tap into you and what feels right to you and just go with it, because you'll be happiest that way.
Yeah.
If you're making decisions based on what everybody else is doing, you're not going to be happy.
And if someone's judging you or making you feel a certain way for making that decision, whatever it might be,
yeah,
they probably shouldn't be in your life.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I am so about removing people who aren't bringing me joy every single day.
Right. And that's not to say that we need friends that are just here to like support everything we do and like say yes to everything. But there's like the level of judgment you can feel when it starts to turn sour and you're like, you're actually toxic in my life versus 1,000%. Being like constructive.
Yeah.
You know, my best friend, actually, I was talking to her about antidepressants last week. And because she was on them pretty much her whole life, like struggled with eating disorders and anxiety after losing a grandparent, which I hate to sound flippant about, but I feel like once you lose a parent, when someone loses a grandparent, you're like, we all lose our grandparents. But
I was thinking like that. You said it. You said it.
I was thinking. Yeah. Like I get so like, I don't know. I'm resentful of that.
Yeah.
But anyways. She has started this whole journey of like ayahuasca and mm-hmm, mushrooms mm-hmm. and like going down this whole psychedelic path, and did ayahuasca and went off her antidepressants and like has never looked back, like been off of them for 4 years, and it somehow shifted her chemistry, and like that works for her. And that's,
I was just
great.
Gonna say, like, yeah, great.
But, and she's always like, herself. Whitney, do this with me. And I'm like, let me,
you have to come to that on your own terms.
exactly.
I like hate feeling out of control of my body, and I hate throwing up. And I know both of those things
will happen. You do.
So I'm like, don't even try to convince me.
Yeah.
My sister, she's the same way. She's like, you have to do this. You have to. She did this like mushroom trip or mm-hmm. something. And she's like, it's life altering. I was like, no. Listen, let me start with a psychic first. What? I haven't done this since I accidentally stumbled upon a medium.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like very excited to see what she has. All she knows is my first name.
Okay.
So I have the call tomorrow.
How did you get like in touch with her? How did you find out about her?
So one of my friends, Kate, is like really big on psychics and like just that world. Like she thinks it's like her form of therapy.
Uh-huh.
Because first of all, like from what I hear, like psychics aren't going to tell you like, this is how you're going to die and this is what's going to happen.
Right.
And like they tell you like really good information. Mm-hmm. And so far it's always been spot on for her. And I was telling her about my experience with a medium and how random it was and how much this medium knew and tapped into my mom. And it was like this whole thing. And I remember feeling like on drugs for a very long time after that, because it was so it was just the amount this person who I've never met knew.
Uh-huh.
I was like,
it felt like so supernatural that it made you feel weird.
Yeah. But also in a way sort of therapy, because at the end she told me that like if I'm ever walking or if I'm ever outside and I ever see a butterfly, just a single butterfly who's following me or just following my path, that's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that often, When I moved to my new house, I would go on walks with Ace, and there was this orange butterfly who always, always, always follows us every single time we go on a walk. It still happens to this day.
Oh, my God.
So I just, like, it's kind of like therapy for me.
Yeah.
And
it gives you things to believe in. And, yeah. like, it probably gives you things to also manifest, right? Like, if she's going to tell you these positive things that are going to happen in your life, then you can, like, actually believe in them and work towards them.
Totally.
Like, I so believe in the power of manifestation and, like, visioning something happening. And
I
then
feel like
somehow
I manifested
you,
my whole life.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
I do.
We're going to have to do a whole other episode on manifestation.
Yes, 100%.
I absolutely believe I manifested my life, mm-hmm. every single thing that's mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. But she came over on Sunday. She was telling me about this psychic that she talked to, and she's like, I don't know, like, and I could tell something was different about her energy. And she's like, I just talked to Blair, that's the psychic. And she's like, it was just kind of life-changing. And I was like, well, give me Blair's number.
Yes,
and I texted Blair, and I was like, can you get me in? And she's like, I just need to know your first name. All she knows is my first name, so stay tuned.
Oh, my God. You know, I'm like, can she look up your phone number and, like, connect it to your name there and find out more information? I'm all about, like, not all about conspiracy theories, but I actually was on an episode of Tyler Henry's show. And
I always think about that.
It's like, I wanted to believe in it so badly, but when you're filming it for a TV show and you know there are producers involved who, like, can do all sorts of background checks and all this stuff, I just didn't buy it. You know, I just couldn't. And even though he said things that I felt like were pretty spot on and that I didn't know how he could know, like, I still couldn't buy it.
I understand that. I feel like, though, I mean, I was never on TV, but I feel like if you Google my name, like, you'll see my birthday. You'll see that I used to be Maddie Ziegler and Kenzie Ziegler's social media manager. I don't know why that comes up.
Is that true?
Yes, I was. Maddie and Kenzie are, like, little sisters to me. But used to be their social media manager a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so that comes up on social media. So
interesting.
I'm curious to see what this girl has to say.
Oh, my God. You'll have to let me know.
I'll fill you in. It's so... I know we, like, got pretty deep and talked about mental health and everything in between, but I really want everyone to kind of hear, like, the entrepreneurship side to Whitney and, mm-hmm. like, how you stepped into that after being on TV. I feel like I only know this world because I do have a lot of friends who are either, like, in movies or on TV.
Uh-huh.
And identifying who they are outside of that personality is really hard to do, first and foremost, mm-hmm. from what they've told me. Mm-hmm. I know it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. But for you to, like, become Whitney Port outside of the hills and the city.
Yeah.
What was that like for you, and, like, figuring out what was next for your career and what are you doing now?
Yeah, so it was really scary for me because I started filming The Hills when I was 20 years old. I was still in college.
Oh, wow.
And everything, when you're filming a TV show like that, you have producers that are, like, making pretty much everything happen for you, you know? So, like, yes, I will say, and I always need to give myself more credit, like, I always had an entrepreneurial spirit. My dad did as well. Like, my dad started his first company. He was selling terrariums, and then he was selling frames, and then he built a licensing company, and then he had, like, a factory in the valley that he was doing. He was, like, buying licenses, like Abercrombie and Fitch and Strawberry Shortcake, and he was printing them on t-shirts and selling them to the mass market. And so I grew up working for him every summer and really grew up, like, learning from him as an entrepreneur, trying to just, like, throw a bunch of stuff at a wall and see what stuck.
Yeah.
And so I always had that in me. And then, long story short, I was interning at Women's Wear Daily when I heard about the internship at Teen Vogue. So I was always really career minded and focused. Like, I wanted to create a path for myself even before the TV show. I applied for the internship at Teen Vogue, which eventually then they told me was going to be on TV. Like, they're like, if you want this internship, you have to be cool with being filmed. So that happened. And then all of a sudden, producers were, like, making every move for me. It was like, there was the Teen Vogue job, and then they got me the job at People's Revolution working for Kelly Catrone, because that's where they wanted to film next, you know? And then they were like, Whitney, do you want to move to New York and work for Diane von Furstenberg? And I was like, absolutely.
Oh,
you know,
God.
And so all of these things were happening that I didn't necessarily make happen. And so I had a lot of, I still deal with like a lot of imposter syndrome just because so many things happened to me that I wasn't actually working for.
Yeah.
Even though I was showing up to like, I was showing up and being myself, but you get what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
So then the show got canceled and I had, when I was doing the city, I had launched my clothing line, Whitney Eve, because I was like, this is what I'm doing this TV show for. You know, like I know I'm smart enough to know that this TV stuff isn't going to last forever. So I need to have some sort of long-term plan for myself. So I launched my clothing line with my dad, actually, while I was filming the city. And so then when the show got canceled, I was like, oh, I can just, I'll continue to do my line. And like social media was just like starting to become a thing. And I was like, I can start like building my brand on social and doing my line. And then my dad passed away and like I couldn't do the line without him. It was like a family business. Paige, who works here, was working with me. My brother Ryan was working with me. And I was just like, this is too hard for me to step into this office every day and do this without him. It's too exhausting. It's too emotional. So I stopped doing that. And I had a couple years where I was just like, what do I do next? You know, like, how do I make anything happen for myself? And I was getting brand deals. Like I was doing social media stuff, but I wasn't necessarily like building anything of my on my own.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant with Sunny and Timmy and I started doing I Love My Baby But, the series on YouTube, where we were really talking about all the pain points of becoming a mother. And I feel like that was my first foray into utilizing like vulnerability as a foundation for my work, you know? And so since then, I've just tried to build a career off of like connecting with others and then connecting with others, being vulnerable, showing who you really are so that you can help others. And then also just like partnering that with my own like design and creativity. So like I'm always trying to like reinvent myself in a way. Like I look at my year and I'm like, I want this many projects to be happening at one time, you know? And like I just kind of like make sure that it happens.
Yeah.
Like we bought a house in the middle of COVID. We were going to turn it into our like Whitney Port headquarters and we're doing a whole renovation now and we're creating a series around the renovation.
Wow.
After I did I Love My Baby But, I was like, this should be something that I like turn into a podcast. So I've been doing that since 2017. Now I can't believe I've had the podcast for 5 years. I was like so ready to give up on it after 2 years. I just felt like it didn't come naturally to me. I mean, I'm sure you felt the same when you just started out. I was like, this doesn't feel right to me. I'm not like a journalist. So nervous.
I still say here, I'm like, oh, wait, what question am I on?
And you can look at it because I know the stress of like wanting to listen, but also needing to figure out what I'm gonna ask next. So it's always for me just about like figuring out what my passions are and then like just making stuff happen. I know I feel like I'm oversimplifying things,
but you're not. I feel like I'm sitting here as you're talking and you're telling me like all of these things and what I'm envisioning, and I always do this, I always compare everything to an analogy.
Yeah,
but I'm sitting here and I feel like it's just like you are like, we're all human in this world. Every single one of us, we're just taking each day as it comes.
Mm-hmm.
We all experience good days. We all experience bad days. We all experience fights, this, that, friendships, relationships. We're all going through similar things.
Yeah.
Probably on different levels at different times.
For sure.
But I feel like what you did was like, you're just taking your, like, I feel like it's a live diary. Like
yes.
It's like your diary, but for the public of like, look, this is what living my life looks like. If mm-hmm. you relate, great. This is how I'm getting through it. And this is how I handle everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't relate, totally fine. But I just feel like you were able to just tap in, like you said in the beginning of this podcast, to you.
Yes.
And there's people that really relate to that and the things that you've been through. They might not relate to the TV side of Whitney, but they relate to, or they
to
might.
The real, and that's what I think the goal is, because I feel like actual change happens in people and actual connection happens when people are sharing who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is my value. I feel like that is what I was meant to do, is just like share who I am and not be ashamed of it. Like the good, the bad, the ugly, just like share all of it and then hope that I can build a community of like-minded people. And then on the side, do other fun stuff that I'm passionate about. Like I was saying, my collaboration with Rent the Runway, which will now be for 3 years, and like invest in companies that I'm really, really passionate about and help highlight what they're up to. And like, yeah, all sorts of cool things. Like,
just, but you're paving your own way. And I think that's like what people need to hear and resonate with, is that it's possible.
Yes.
Like,
to just be you and like to create a career around that.
Totally.
And I'm not the kind of, my goal isn't to be an influencer that's just like showing what I'm up to all day. Like if you follow me on Instagram, you see that I don't do that. I'm not like, good morning and here's my coffee and here's our ride to school. And like, I hardly even post in real time just because it stresses me out too much. Like I'm really not a good, quote, good influencer, but I do it on my terms and I do it when it feels right to me and I share when it feels right to me. And I have to also come to terms with that, because I compare myself to other people. I'm like, oh my God, they're posting all day, every day. Like, your job is to be an influencer and do this too. But I'm like, no, actually, my job is not to be an influencer. Like, it's the vehicle for which I share a lot of stuff, but I don't need to do, like we were saying, what everybody else is doing to create my, like, my career. You know what I mean? Like, it can look different for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It 100% can. I always say I'm not a good influencer, too. I mean, granted, I only have 27,000 followers
That's
on Instagram.
That's a lot.
But I don't, like, someone said to me, I post, like, yesterday I did this series of, like, things the internet influenced me to buy, like, just because I love posting what works for me.
Yeah.
And someone was like, you should start a like to know it. I was like, sister, I do not have time for that.
I know.
I'm not a link girl. Like, I'm not. Sometimes there are days where I'm so burnt out. Like, I was like, I don't even want to post on Instagram today.
Yeah. I used to be like, when I was working with someone who was like helping me with my Instagram and trying to grow it, because I thought that I really need to grow it and like be posting every day.
Yeah.
I was posting every day and posting at the right times and paying all attention. And I was like, this is not making me happy. Like, if this is, who's even going to notice if you miss a day of posting? Is anybody even going to notice?
No. Or yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, who cares?
Literally, who cares? Ever since I like blocked Reddit out of my mind and like blocked people who were sending like negative things. Like, I posted the other day and like, I'm sure they're a great company. You might have great company culture, but I found out that this certain cult favorite sunscreen affects like coral reefs and like different things like that. And I posted about it.
Yeah.
And they were like, I got some like DMs, like, who do you think you are bringing down another company as like an owner of a, I was like, whoa, like, that's not what I was doing. Like, I'm sure that they are aware of the situation and are probably trying to find ways around it or ingredients around it. But at the same time, like, I'm just sharing what I found out and why I don't want to use the sunscreen.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I have to do, I will only look at my messages and stuff when I'm really in the mood to hear it, you know, and I like feel strong and good. But I also have, because I've been in this industry for so long and started being on TV at 20, I just like could not care less what anybody thinks.
Yeah. Like, I'm getting to that point.
You will. And especially with having your second child, you'll just be too tired to even care. Like, you won't. It doesn't
matter.
I mean, and that sound, I don't want to make it sound like I'm not, like, I don't care about what people are telling me. And I want to be like a socially active member of society that's doing good. And I never want, like, I don't want people to think I'm not listening or I'm not responding or whatever it is. But like, there's a certain wall that I have to put up for my own protection, you know? And like, that, if that means that I'm not like the most interactive influencer, then that's what it means.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, as much as I resent my dad and we're like on weird terms right now, he did teach me like, you have to do what works for you.
Yeah.
And as selfish as that is in terms of advice, like, again, we're here for ourselves. And
yes,
obviously now our family that we've built, but you just have to do what works for you.
So
and
true.
Ever since I started doing that, I'm like, Don't care.
Don't care. Don't care. Right?
Yeah. Like, if that makes me selfish, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
Because you start to get, like, kind of high on the happiness and, like, high on the confidence that it brings you when you're actually listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to get to this question before we wrap up because I do really love this question. And I have a feeling that, you know, you're such a role model to so many successful women who balance their career and being a wife, a mother, an entrepreneur, and everything, a friend, and everything in between. But is there anyone that you particularly look up to that's helped forge, like, the path that you've been on, or someone that, like, you are just like, this is my rock?
Yeah. I would probably say my parents. And even though my dad isn't alive anymore, I still think that his energy and his voice is what I turn to when I feel like I don't know what to do. Like, I remember when both my parents when my dad was alive and there would be all these things, I would call my mom and dad every single day and tell them everything that was happening to me, and I would rely on their feedback. And I'm so proud of the person that they shaped me into, because I think being in this industry, you can be, I don't know, it can affect you in a lot of ways. And I just feel proud that it didn't affect me, because my parents just think did such a great job of raising me and, like, exposing me to life. And so it's really them. There's another person in my life now who I'm not even really close with, but I follow her on social and I think she's just so amazing. And her name is Valeria Lipovetsky.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who she is?
Yeah.
So she's, like, another influencer, and I don't want to downplay, like, influencers, but she, there's something about her that I just find, like, so real and so, also, same to you, like, not caring about what anybody else thinks and living her life to the fullest, because our time on this planet is so, so minuscule. And I just feel like she does such an amazing job of showing that. So in terms of, like influencer circle, I would say her. But like, my parents and my husband are really whose voices I turn to when I feel like I need some direction.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a perfect answer. Good. I was just curious. Yeah. I feel like people, you know, for me, I feel like I was always, like, the black sheep of my family. And then I just figuring out friend groups and friends in general growing up was just very difficult for me.
Yeah.
And so now I, like, am very picky on who I allow in, like, my friend circle, or who I look up to, or who I even,
like, take, like, advice from,
or spend my time with.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one for me now is, like, if you get to spend time with me, I must really like you because I'm very, like, selective on who gets to have some of my energy that I'm giving out so much in other areas of my life, that the little energy that I have left, if you're getting it, you're very lucky.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it. And I think that it's so important to protect your energy because this world can, like, really suck it up, you know, and no one else is going to protect it for you. So,
exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, that just rounded everything we've been saying. No one else is going to protect it but you because we're all here for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I always add in now, because I feel like I'm now beating, my heart beats for Ace. Like, he's my whole world.
Of
and I'm
course.
Sure it'll be for her too, but I'm not connected to her yet.
No, you don't know her yet.
I don't know
but
her.
But it will. Yeah. And, like, I think when you think about what's best for our children, it's usually what's best for you. You know what I mean? Or, like, vice versa, what's best for you is best for your children. Because, like, a happy mom and a stable mom is then, like, a good, happy mom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I feel like there's so much that we were supposed to cover in this
script. It's fine. That was so good, though.
I know.
I'm so sorry to hear about your mom. And also your, like, your dad, and with a baby coming, I can imagine that that's really hard.
The dad thing was a total surprise. I did not foresee, like, those feelings coming.
To come up.
Yeah. We've always had a rocky relationship, and then I had Ace, and my family kind of just, like, came together. It was like I was the first person to have a child in our family. And it was, like, this whole thing, and then we all got really close, and then there was a couple instances where, like, I don't know if it was, like, revelations or dreams, or like I just started to wake up resenting him every day.
Mm-hmm. And because you were like, it's so easy for me to love the shit out of this child, yeah, and just like do everything and provide for it. Like, how could my dad not? But you also have to think probably, and I know nothing about your situation, but like, I mean, his love was probably spread between four kids, and yeah, like he was dealing with a loss and probably didn't know how to show up emotionally for
you
guys.
Well, I'm sure I know he loved us. Grant, my parents had been divorced since I was little.
Okay.
And we had a horrible stepmom who's no longer my stepmom anymore. Okay. It's like a new stepmom now.
Okay.
I know, it's like my whole life story is very interesting.
Yes, it is. No wonder people want to make a reality show at your office.
It's not happening. It's definitely not happening. But I don't know. I don't know what it was. Something set me off. It was Ace fell in the bathtub and I didn't think anything was wrong with him. I was like, I'm his mom. I was able to monitor the situation. Yes, he fell and hit his head, but he was fine.
Yeah.
He stopped crying after 3 minutes. I checked for the concussion signs, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And my dad, like, sent me in all caps, like, screaming at me that, like, why would you put him to bed? Like, basically, like, I felt like he was saying I was a bad mother. And, like, it's not that instance that made me, like, cut off from him, but it was so triggering, mm-hmm, that I was like, whoa. I'm – boundaries are going up.
Yeah.
And I need to, like, take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've been going to therapy since I'm 9 years old. So
yeah,
it's a
constant thing for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think maybe having this girl will hopefully soften things a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
You'll see.
We'll see. But thank you for coming
on.
Oh, let me ask before we wrap up, because I want people to hear this. I'm going to go back into podcast voice.
Yes.
Where, if people want to just like follow along with what you're doing, your YouTube channel, what you're working on next, like what is the best way to keep up with Whitney?
So my Instagram at Whitney Eve Port is probably the best place. It's like the hub of all things. And then my YouTube is just Whitney Port's channel. I'm redesigning my website and that will be relaunched in September.
Oh,
so that
soon.
Will just be WhitneyPort.com. Yeah, it's going to be a really awesome like lifestyle shop. And we're going to have like a styling chat room, like fun situation. But yeah, Instagram, YouTube, and my podcast at Dear Media is with Wit.
Oh my God.
Those are the best places to find me.
There you go. That's where you can find Wit.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on your podcast listening platform. Share your favorite moments with me on social media and tune in next week. Again, I'm your host, Lindsay Carter, and this is Ready, Set, Spill.